In today's episode of The Leadersmith, I'm going to be talking about The Weapons of Influence by Robert Cialdini, professor at Arizona State University. Stick around.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdes.
Okay, welcome to The Leadersmith. I am your host, Darren Gurdes, and I'm going to be talking about influence, science, and practice. This is Read to Lead, and what I'm going to be talking about, this book, Influence, Science, and Practice, is kind of the academic version of a more popular version called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. There are six major ways that charlatans will try to deceive you using weapons of influence against you. And so they include things like reciprocation, consistency, social proof, liking, authority, and scarcity. And what he means by this, so let's take them one at a time. So reciprocation, he says, the rule for reciprocation assures that whether the fruit of our actions are sweet or bitter, we reap what we sow. So let's think about it just, you know, simply, if somebody is kind to you, you tend to return kindness back. If somebody is rude to you and flips you off, you tend to be angry and be rude back. That's reciprocation. But what happens is in business, we see this reaction, this normal, natural human reaction of reciprocation employed against us. A waiter is not just nice at his table and he gives you his bill, but he gives you a mint with it. Ooh, he's giving me a little bit something extra. Maybe I'll give him a slightly bigger tip, right? That's the same idea. Reciprocation. You ever been in the mall and they gave you a free sample and then you were like, I'm looking at this, like maybe I really want it. Like, well, yeah, because they gave you that, you're thinking, now maybe I need to return something. It's okay on a small scale, but it can be abused. The Moonies played to reciprocation all the time. They'd give you this free flower. Here's our flower. And then they'd ask you for a donation. The Moonies were a cult back in the 60s and 70s. Unscrupulous businessmen do this. They're giving to get. And when they play on that, now it's gone from something that's a normal reaction to something that they're trying to manipulate you. And that's really what's going on. There was this really interesting passage on page 34 where he said, a woman talking about, after learning the hard way, I no longer let a guy in a club buy me a drink because I do not want either of us to feel that I am obligated. Wow, that's playing on that same desire, that manipulation. Now, on the upside, I was looking at a picture of my daughter recently. My daughter, before, she was going to a friend's birthday party, and she had this like big smile on her face, like she was so excited about going to this birthday party. And what happened was that previously, just a few months earlier, it was her birthday. We had normally done birthdays at home, but now we had invited a number of our friends to her birthday party, and she got this rash of birthday invitations shortly thereafter. And so that's the same thing. That's reciprocation in action. So reciprocation is a natural human function like all the others, but it can be played on by the unscrupulous. Okay, consistency. Again, we tend to be consistent people. Consistency is generally good. We use it as a mental shortcut. So we're not here in left field and then we're in right field and then right. We're generally consistent about what we're doing and who we are. It's good, but the unscrupulous play on this too. So they play on commitments and then they hold you to them. So the used car salesman, when he says, Just sign here. What would you like? Or if I could get it today, would you get this? And they're trying to get you to say yes so that they can then hold you to that consistency. When a political fundraiser asks you for any donation, just $1 for the cause, you're thinking, oh, it's only a dollar. No, it's not a dollar. It's your consistency. Because now if you contributed a dollar, they're going to come back for more. Cialdini said this on page 66, it scares me enough that I am rarely willing to sign a petition anymore, even for positions I support. Now that's crazy coming from the guy that actually wrote the book on influence. And he's worried enough about people playing on his consistency that he won't even sign petitions. Okay, social proof, number three. So social proof, you know, this is funny because I was talking about this. I knew I was going to be talking about this today and yesterday. I get this thing called BookBub. If you've never seen this before, you should sign up for BookBub. So I was looking at this, and there was this book called Elevate by somebody that I've never heard of. And I read a lot, so it's an author I never heard of. But then this guy had like 200 plus, I think it was 205 five-star reviews. Crazy. I was like, well, I've got to buy it. That's social proof. I'm relying on what others think are important. Cialdini defines social proof this way. We view a behavior as correct in a given situation to the degree that we see others performing it. So ads for, you know, the best-selling truck. Well, it doesn't mean it's the best driving truck or the one that, you know, people really like after they buy it. But the best selling truck means, oh, other people are doing it. Must be good. The man on the street testimonial. Excuse me, sir. Do you buy this product? Yes, I love this product. We know it's fake and we still buy it. Right. So that's why they do those kind of things. We pay closer attention to our peer group. So if you're an adult, you pay attention to what adults do. If you're of a particular race, you pay attention more to what a particular race does. This isn't racism. This is just the way that we operate. If you're a particular gender, same thing. Children even. So Cialdini gives a story of his son who wouldn't stop wearing floaties in the pool. And he tried desperately to teach him how to swim without floaties. But then his son saw another kid his age swimming without floaties, took the floaties off and was swimming like a fish. And because it was his social peer. Okay, so it's the same thing. Now, there's a dark side to this as well. Think about copycats that do bad things. There's a suicide in the paper, and then there's a rash of the same type, not different types of suicides, but I mean, if the guy committed suicide by jumping off a building, then there's a rash of people jumping off the building. If he committed suicide by shooting, then there's a rash of shooting because there's these copycats. Same things with mass shootings, right? There's copycats that will try to engage in the same kind of mass shooting, but only within that media market. And that's how you can tell that it's a copycat based on that, because you know, let's say it was just localized in Arizona. It doesn't happen in Nebraska and Florida as well if they didn't hear about it. It only happens in the media market that heard about it. So there's a dark side to social proof as well. Okay, number four is liking. Liking is, he calls the friendly thief. Okay, we most prefer to say yes to requests of people that we know and like, says Cialdini on page 142. And so this is why something like going to a Tupperware party is dangerous, because it's playing on that natural friendship that you have with that person in order to part money from you and to buy their stuff. And if you go to a Tupperware party, just beware, that's the whole point of the Tupperware party. We don't use this anymore, but MCI, one of the telecoms, used to have this friends and family plan. So if you can rope friends and family in, you can have them at a little discount, but then now you've pulled them into your universe and MCI wants them to buy it as well. So name dropping, it also happens. So I had somebody called me once and said, hey, Jessica said that I should call you about this. Who? Jessica. And they gave me the last name. I'm not going to share it here. But she was one of my former students. And so I felt obligated to take the call and listen to this guy's spiel because this was somebody that I respected. And so I wasn't going to, you know, just hang up on the guy. So you got to be careful. Liking can be used to manipulate you. Now, how does liking work? Physical attractiveness, similarity, and compliments. So physical attractiveness is a big one. So people who are physically more attractive, they get more votes in political elections. They get 12 to 14% greater pay compared to people that are not so physically attractive. There are multiple studies about this. They're two times less likely to go to jail, which is bizarre that somebody who's physically attractive is less likely to go to jail. even if you were blind, it would be very obvious that we use, and this is how we manipulate liking, we use sex to sell merchandise, right? Should we do that? Probably not. The merchandise should be able to stand on its own, but yet we do it because it works. Similarity also works in the same way. Statistically, they've done studies. This is an older study where somebody needed a quarter for a payphone, right? And we were more likely to give them help if they looked like us. And I don't mean that they were white and we're white, or they're black and we're black, but they dressed the same way. They either dressed up or they dressed down. Whichever it was, both groups are discriminating against the other because there's this I'm better than you-ism, or this is my tribe, or you're not in my tribe. Okay? And so similarity is also important. And then compliments. We like compliments. who doesn't like compliments? I like compliments, right? In fact, we like compliments even when we know that they're false. When we know that they're fake, we still like compliments. And bad salesmen, you know, the evil kind of people, will play on these. They'll give you these false compliments. They'll look for these similarities, like, oh, you go camping too. Oh, I can't wait to go camping because they saw some camping equipment in your car or whatever it was. Okay. Models and celebrities are employed to hawk products all the time. Like, how many Big Macs do you think Michael Jordan really ate? Number five is authority. Now, listening to authority or obeying properly installed authorities is usually a good idea, but it can be abused. But sometimes we borrow authority, and we can borrow it very easily from different things. So, for example, titles. Are you a doctor? Are you an officer, governor, professor, general? Whatever the title is, we kind of give a certain deference to those things. Clothes can also be something that is manipulated. We respond to those in uniform. A police, we react to differently to a policeman in uniform than we do to, for example, a doctor wearing the white coat in uniform. Okay, but we show a certain deference to uniforms. There have been studies that showed that we wait longer for luxury cars before we honk our horn to tell them to go if they wait at a green light. Okay, so all these things, we don't even know that we're doing it, but we have this deference to authority. Some people will create this false expertise or false titles, and you can even fool yourself with this. So, you know, Covey talks about in principle-centered leadership, never borrow strength. Never borrow strength from your position or your experience or your intellect. An argument should be able to stand on its own. You should never have to say, and I've never seen anything good ever come out of this where somebody said, well, because I'm the vice president, that's why. No, Eric Schmidt of Google calls this hippos, right? What's the highest paid person's opinion? If you have hippos telling you what to do, they're borrowing strength, like Covey's talking about. Highest paid person's opinion. If you're working in that kind of scenario, you're no longer in a meritocracy. The idea should be able to stand on its own. So never borrow strength. And then there was this other concept that grabbed me as well. Ken Blanchard, Blanchard's written dozens, probably upwards of 50 books in business. He said, when I was in seventh grade, I came home all excited that I won a president of the seventh grade. My father said, that's great, Ken, but now that you have been elected president, don't ever use your position, because great leaders are great because people respect and trust them, not because they have power. Now, that's great advice, okay? So he wasn't going to borrow strength from his office. That's another way that you could borrow as well, okay? So be careful with those kind of things when you deal with authority, because people can play on them. Okay, last one is scarcity. So scarcity is, we want something when we can't have it. And so with scarcity, there's only so much to go around. And if we can't have something, we want it even more. And this also plays on the concept of loss aversion. People seem more, this is Cialdini's writing, people seem more motivated by the thought of losing something than by the thought of gaining something of equal value. And that's true. It feels worse. And there have been studies that have proved this. It feels worse if you lose $10 than if you find $10. Like, you feel a greater loss than you feel the gain. Okay, so shady marketers play on this idea of scarcity. So how many ads, and you're going to hear this now, after I talked about this, you're going to watch TV and you're going to be like, that's it, I've heard this. Okay, how many ads have you heard of, there's only a few left in stock, or supplies are limited, so act now, or limited time only? Really, they want to sell products. If you place an order for another 100,000, you don't think that they would make another 100,000 for you? It's not limited, but they're trying to play on that trigger. So it's not fair. It's being a little manipulative to say those kinds of things. And these are common ploys. So it can be really bad if you're going to buy a car, or a realtor talks to you about, as you're going to look at a house, says they goose you off the fence. And by that, they mean they say, well, you know, we have another bidder that's interested in this, or we have another person coming to look at this house. That's a ploy to employ scarcity in order to make that decision, preferably to buy. Okay. Same thing with lost leaders at a department store. You go in there and there's things that, think about Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, these things that are very cheap to get you in there so that you're buying more. Okay. He concludes by saying, quote, if you really want to get something done, you've got three options: do it yourself, pay top dollar, or forbid your teenager to do it. And I think that's right. Having teenagers, I've seen that kind of thing. If you tell them one thing, they'll say, no, I'm going to do the other. Okay, to recap, here are the weapons of influence again, and you want to understand these. Reciprocation, that is, you do this, I do that, you know, in kind. Consistency, social proof, liking, authority, and scarcity. Okay, so let me wrap this up with some final thoughts. And if you enjoyed what we talked about, please subscribe. I try to give these daily. I'm putting these out here because I want you to be the kind of leader that's going to go and influence people positively and not do these kind of shady things to people. Okay, here are the final thoughts. I want you to understand these weapons of influence so you do not have these used against you. Please don't do these to others as well, but I don't want you to have these used against you. Once you hear about them, you'll start to see them everywhere. It's like, I call these minivan moments in my classroom, because when I bought my first minivan, I never really paid attention to minivans before. I didn't want a minivan, but then I was driving down the road after buying my first minivan, and I was like, whoa, where are all these minivans coming from? And it was like all the same make and model. I was now aware of it. You're now aware of these things. You'll see them everywhere. Okay, finally, our quotation for contemplation. This comes from T. Harv Eker. Great book. T. Harv Eker said, "No thought lives in your head, rent free."